Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Thursday, August 31st, 2017. Your humble host is heading for the coast because we've got a heat wave. 100 degree plus expected in the Bay Area over the Labor Day weekend. So I'm heading to Los Angeles, and our next podcast will be on Tuesday, September 5th, right here. Interesting story surfaced yesterday about the New America Foundation. And I want to be clear that I have talked to many of the fine fellows and ladies who are on staff at the New America Foundation, and they do a lot of good work. But there's a stink, a stench, an aroma over this liberal Washington-based think tank, because one of its major donors, Eric Schmidt, who was chairman of Google and was kicked upstairs, he is the chair of Alphabet, the holding company for Google and its tentacles. And Eric Schmidt has donated to either through Google or through his private foundation at least $21 million to the New America Foundation over the last few years. And after a team that works for or is part of the think tank called Open Markets published some critical comments about Google and applauded the European Union's decision to impose a $2.7 billion fine on Google for breaching antitrust rules and abusing its market dominance, a guy named Barry Lynn, senior fellow there, wrote, "Google's market power is one of the most critical challenges for competition policymakers in the world today." Now, I think that's a pretty obvious statement, and it's understated in respect to the market power that Google does enjoy. It is nearly a monopoly in almost every market where it operates. And Eric Schmidt is an interesting guy. I'm looking forward to a book that is due to be released in the next few months by Julian Assange. And somebody leaked to me a couple of chapters from that book about how Eric Schmidt came to visit Julian Assange when he was in England, but before he had to take refuge at the London Embassy of the Nation of Ecuador. And it's chilling because the implications of Assange's report are that Eric Schmidt was basically an agent for the U.S. government and the Obama administration and came to kind of scope out Julian Assange. And Assange figured that just about everything he said to Schmidt and colleagues was reported directly to elements of the U.S. government. In this current case of the New America Foundation, we don't have direct proof that Eric Schmidt intervened. But the head of the New America Foundation, who is Anne-Marie Slaughter, she notified the Open Markets team that the time has come for them to part ways with the New America Foundation. Slaughter said the decision was in no way based on the content of your work, although she later accused Lynn of imperiling the institution as a whole. So, that's a pretty clear indication that some pressure was applied from Schmidt or people close to him, and that the New America Foundation caved. Now, there's a fascinating op-ed published by Zephyr Teachout. You may recall she's run for office in New York State. She is a progressive who has a lot of respect among progressives. And she wrote a piece that's at The Intercept today saying that back in 2010, while I was pushing to break up big banks because they'd become too powerful, I started to realize it wasn't just big banks, but it was corporate monopolies. Then she says, "I found Barry C. Lynn and the Open Markets team at the New America Foundation in Washington. They were doing deep investigations into Monsanto and Tyson, the agriculture industry, and looking at what she describes as a troubling new feature of our digital economy, the great power wielded by a handful of tech companies, including Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Google. The Open Markets team was grounded not only in critique, but solutions, showing how old antitrust laws and principles could address the political and economic distortions caused by monopolies. Then she ran against Andrew Cuomo for governor of New York, and she became a fellow of that Open Markets team. And after the decision in June by the European Union, The Open Markets team put out a press statement consistent with the work it had been doing. Within 72 hours, New America's president Anne Marie Slaughter told Lynn that he and all of us on the Open Markets team had to leave. As the New York Times reported, Slaughter emailed Lynn to say the time has come for Open Markets and New America to part ways, and in that email accused Lynn of imperiling the institution as a whole. Slaughter has tweeted that the article was false, and she later added, "Facts are largely right." So this shows the outsized power that a donor like Eric Schmidt can have on the work of a think tank. And what is ironic, as Teach Out notes, one of the most important features of Lynn's work is that he shows the connection between economic and political power. Monopolies threaten small business and beat up labor unions, but they also undermine all of our freedoms. Ironically, Google's actions proved Lynn's thesis better than any words can do. And so Zephyr Teachout is organizing a new group. She's going to be the board chair of Citizens Against Monopoly. And I suspect we'll be hearing more from her and from Barry C. Lynn. Today I'm releasing an in-depth interview. It's the second in a series exposing the retaliation faced by individuals at the Air Force Academy for reporting sex crimes. And in the case of Eric Thomas, a cadet who was only 6 weeks away from graduation, ready to head to flight school, when he was, in the terms of the Air Force Academy, disenrolled. Why? Because he had spent 2 years as an undercover individual reporting to the Office of the Special Investigator, and he helped win 3 convictions for sexual assault, one against a very high-profile football player who it's thought was being protected by the top brass at the Air Force Academy. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Eric Thomas when he talks about how it feels to be the focus of retaliation by powerful military leadership.
Sir, it's hard. I was given, and as I listened to the interview you gave with Ms. Beasley, I wanted to clarify or at least elaborate more on what she was speaking of in terms of the life sentence. I was given a code. So anytime anyone is given a code in terms of when they leave the academy, it's a rating on whether or not you can serve in the military. To put it simply, I was given the same rating as the convicted. I didn't break any federal crimes. I was not under UCMJ. I was not. I was disenrolled for having too many demerits, for leaving base when I wasn't supposed to, essentially. And it's hard because there is an echo. I want to serve. I was supposed to fly. I had my eyes PRK'd. I was pilot qualified. 6 weeks before graduation, I was supposed to go to Vance, Oklahoma. For pilot training. And I was given the boot and I didn't even know it was coming. I received a knock on my door to go to a disenrollment briefing, and a process that takes 2 weeks for cadets that are being disenrolled for valid reasons. I had to be off academy grounds in that night around 6 o'clock. And so it was very difficult. And then the echo that comes after that, what I did wasn't meant to be known. I wasn't looking for attention. I wasn't looking to be in the spotlight at all. It defeats the purpose of what we do. After the media and after everything came to light, I lost a lot of friends. I went to weddings that are my best friends and couldn't stand next to the groomsmen simply because there are other Air Force generals and officials there. And I am not, I'm tainted, right? I am not good company to have around. I'm kicked out of the boys club, if you will. To have the superintendent boot me out and not even give me the rights of due process, to not even hear what I have to say, to go on air and lie and contradict, all because I reported sexual assaults, all because it affected the football team, our priorities are wrong.
I invite you to listen to the full interview with Eric Thomas. I'm releasing it to subscribers today at all of our outlets, peterbcollins.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spreaker. And speaking of Spreaker, I got a note from Rob Greenlee, who is the head of partnerships there, to inform us that the Peter B. Collins podcast has been added to Spreaker's audio podcast listening apps and platform, and you should be able to get it either with a Mac phone or with an Android phone. And I hope that those of you who use Android will check out Spreaker as a good way to capture each episode of the Peter B. Collins podcast. And while I'm at it, I like to pause and thank the people who support my work here at the PBC podcast with your subscriptions. People like Sammy Grigo, Fashal Caminos was stopped by recently, Steve Wazinski, and Judy Holloway. I invite you to support my work, too. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Click on the menu button, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page where you've got some choices, and I hope you will choose to support my work. Well, there's been a positive break for Roger and Carol Schuller. Roger Schuller is the intrepid investigative reporter who used to live in Alabama and report on the corruption and the sexual affairs of these pro-family Christian Republican leaders who get elected in Alabama. And as you know, because we covered it in great detail, a few years back in 2013, Roger Schuller spent 5 months in jail behind a bogus defamation claim and a contempt charge from a judge who had been wheeled in from another part of the state. It's one of the most obvious abuses and glaring abuses of judicial power that I have seen in recent years. And the 11th Circuit, the Federal District Appeals Court based in Atlanta, has ruled in favor of the Schuller's recent appeal. And I've linked to the story at Legal Schnauzer so that you can read it for yourselves. But basically, a judge tried to deny them any right to appeal, saying that they didn't have the correct status as indigent plaintiffs in the case, and it had to do with whether the process service, the notice of the legal papers, was properly initiated. And the appeals court says, without addressing the merits of the appeal, we reverse the district court's dismissal because it should have effectuated service for the Schullers who had proper status. So the case is alive and well, and I hope that someday Roger Schuller is going to get the vindication he richly deserves. As always, the Schullers could use your financial help. Just drop by at legalschnauzer.blogspot.com and hit the PayPal button if you're able to support them. A federal judge in San Antonio today, actually yesterday, blocked Texas from enforcing its ban on sanctuary cities, challenging the constitutionality of a state law that clearly exceeds the scope of a state's authority because states and local governments have no jurisdiction over immigration issues. So the law, known as SB4, prohibits cities and counties from adopting policies that limit immigration enforcement. It allows cops to question the immigration status of anyone they stop, and it threatens officials who violate the law with fines, jail time, and removal from office. Now, the big cities in Texas, which are run by Democrats, including Houston, Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio, have appealed this, and Judge Garcia blocked three provisions of the law, including one that said local government entities and officials may, quote, not adopt, enforce, or endorse any policy limiting the enforcement of immigration laws. Lawyers said that the prohibition violates the First Amendment, and Judge Garcia said that the plaintiffs are likely to succeed on that argument. He said the government can disagree with certain viewpoints, but they cannot ban them just because they're inconsistent with the view that the government seeks to promote. SB 4 clearly targets and seeks to punish speakers based on their viewpoint on local immigration enforcement policy. He also said that the law's provision banning policies that limit enforcement of immigration laws was unconstitutionally vague and failed to define the specific prohibited conduct. So this is a very important ruling. California is about to pass a statewide ban on, it's an effort to codify sanctuary cities in a way that challenges the federal effort to restrict or deny funding to state and local governments that adopt these sanctuary policies. I have a couple more stories about sanctuary, and this one is one that Donald Trump has used to vilify immigrants and make it seem like, on a daily basis, undocumented people are released by local authorities and then go on to commit serious crimes, including murder. And he has used the 2015 case, the killing of Kate Steinle, a woman who died by a gunshot on the waterfront in San Francisco as she was strolling with her dad. Now, Tim Redmond, who is an intrepid San Francisco investigative reporter, has a website now called 48hills.org. And I've linked to his story because it turns out that the government and the prosecutor have been using an alias for the suspect here, whose name is, his real name, is Jose Zarate. And Zarate is a guy who was in federal immigration custody. He completed his sentence, and they released him. And instead of the feds deporting him at that point, because he had been serving time for being in the country illegally, he has never been convicted of a violent crime, but because he has attempted to enter and stay in the United States multiple times, he does have a rap sheet of so-called felonies, but they are all for immigration-related issues, except for a single marijuana violation, which was 20 years old, which is what brought him to San Francisco after he completed his sentence at the federal detention lockup in Southern California. Then the district attorney in San Francisco declined to prosecute this lid of marijuana from 20 years ago, and so they released this guy, Zarate, and he was left homeless, no place to go. He then stumbled upon a stolen weapon, a Sig Sauer pistol that had been stolen. We don't think it was by Zarate. No one has accused him of that, including the cops and the DA. But he picked up this pistol, which had been stolen from a federal agent of the Bureau of Land Management from his car parked in the city. And apparently while he was examining it or holding it, the gun went off. This is according to his defense attorney, a public defender, named Matt Gonzalez. So whoever stole the gun ditched it. They wrapped it in what we think was a T-shirt, left it on a bench, which is where Zarate says he found it, and then the gun went off, and one bullet, hit Kate Steinle and killed her. Now, it is tragic, and there are a lot of people who want to claim that they can turn back the clock and say, well, you know, if San Francisco had done the right thing and called ICE and had this guy deported, this never would have happened. But we can't rewrite history. We cannot turn back the clock. And San Francisco was on solid ground to release this man because ICE had not issued a warrant to pick him up. Now we have a brand new case. This occurred just recently, August 18th, in Santa Rosa, which is in the county just north of me in Sonoma County here in California. And this is another tragic case. This one involved domestic violence by an undocumented immigrant. His name, the suspect, is Nery Margos, and he is was subject to deportation to Guatemala when a girlfriend accused him of domestic violence. He was taken into custody. He posted bail. And when he did, a sequence of events went into place. Now, first of all, Margos violated the terms of his release because he was given a court order to stay away from the girlfriend, Veronica Ramirez. But he ignored that, went to their apartment, and a few weeks later, this was on August 3rd when he was released, on August 18th, he walked into the Santa Rosa Police Department and confessed that he had killed his girlfriend. So now the people who look back and try to rewrite history are trying to figure out who they can pin the blame on for this. The Department of ICE had not issued a warrant or a detainer for this man, Margos, but they're now saying that the Santa Rosa or the Sonoma County sheriffs only gave them a few minutes to pick him up before they released him. So there's going to be a round of finger-pointing about this case. There is a tragic loss of a woman named Veronica Ramirez, and her ex-husband says that they never should have released this guy. They should have handed him over to ICE, and that, of course, is hindsight. But the issues related to whether or not a local law enforcement agency should turn over an individual like this remain murky. And one of the, you know, ironic factors here is that this suspect's immigrant status may have been the reason that the girlfriend didn't report that he was violating the stay-away order, because while she wanted him out of her presence, she was trying perhaps to avoid triggering his deportation. Nick Kristof, the columnist for the New York Times, has a good reputation as a humanitarian. He travels the world and reports on people who are being abused or treated in an unjust manner. And today, using words and pictures in his column, which I've linked to in the show file for this podcast, he draws attention to the situation in Yemen. And I'll note that while we have serious flooding and dramatic problems along the Gulf Coast, Texas, Louisiana, we're not alone. In Asia, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh have had serious flooding problems due to the monsoon. 1,200 people have died there. In Yemen, they've had serious flooding over the last few days, and 18 people have been killed. But the flooding is short-term. The bombing and the war crimes by Saudi Arabia in Yemen continue on a daily basis for the foreseeable future. And I applaud Nick Kristof for saying, let's be blunt. With American and British complicity, the Saudi government is committing war crimes in Yemen. And it's true. The country is on the brink of famine. 60% of the population doesn't know where the next meal will come from. The Saudis bomb on a regular basis. The U.S. supplies those munitions and resupplies those munitions. And it's about time we put a stop to it. I'm glad Nick Kristof has raised the issue today. Being snarky, I just say, Nick, why did it take you so long? In the latest leaked of the Trump-Russia saga, we have a series of leaks, one from Bob Mueller's special counsel office. Possibly it came from the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman's office. But they have leaked this to send a message to the Trump White House that if Trump issues pardons to any people who might be implicated in crimes related to this investigation, that a pardon won't have any effect because these individuals will be pursued on state charges simultaneously. So, that's interesting, but I still can't justify the leaks that keep surfacing. The AP's latest leak is that a grand jury used by Mueller has heard secret testimony from Rinat Akhmetzin, a Russian-American lobbyist who reportedly was at that June 2016 meeting with Donnie Jr. at Trump Tower. And CNN's got a leak. They reported that Mueller has issued subpoenas to an attorney who formerly represented Paul Manafort and to a Manafort spokesman. And the leaks go on day by day. The Trump State Department has ordered Russia to close the consulate here in San Francisco. They've got a beautiful property in, I think it's in Pacific Heights. And in retaliation to Russia's order to reduce the embassy staff in Moscow by 755 people, the State Department said, in the spirit of parity, they would require Russia to close three offices by September 2nd. Now, that's a really quick turnaround. In Moscow, they gave the Americans and the Russians who worked at the embassy, I believe, 3 weeks. So this is a little bit draconian, but the spirit of parity, that's something I had never really seen invoked before. You may have heard that the UN human rights chief, Zayed Ra'ad Al Hussein, has denounced Donald Trump for his attacks on media outlets as fake news. He says this could amount to incitement to violence and has potentially dangerous consequences. Now, this man, the human rights commissioner, is a native of Jordan. And I know that Jordan has a nicer autocratic king than most of the authoritarian royal regimes in the region. But to have a Jordanian lecture Americans on the importance of journalism and Trump's nefarious attacks on the media? We have reached a new low of some sort. This one's deja vu, or should we file it under supplushange? But the city of Tal Afar has been liberated by the Iraqi government, and they have declared victory over the Islamic State for the entire province, including Mosul. That's Nineveh province. And I just want to remind you that it was only about 10 years ago that the administration of George W. Bush was holding up Tal Afar as the model of a city that had been relieved of the terrorist threat, relieved of the rear guard of the Ba'athist government of Saddam Hussein, and that it was the model of a liberated city that was going to be rebuilt with American dollars. How many times will Fallujah and Mosul and Tal Afar have to be liberated? North Korea's loading up on missile defense. They've placed a $1.6 billion order for high-tech radar and weapons, intending to shoot missiles out of the sky. It's what I call mythical defense. Don't count on it. That would be a really risky move. And finally today, Eric Prince, Prince of Darkness, Prince of Blackwater, Betsy DeVos's brother, the guy who changed the name of Blackwater to Z and then Akadami and what the hell's it called today? Frontier Services Group. But first and foremost, Eric Prince is a leader of mercenaries, paid soldiers. And he's arguing in the New York Times today that contractors, not troops, will save Afghanistan. And he's arguing that Trump's troop increases from 8,400 to about 12,000 are kind of meaningless. And on that, I agree with Eric Prince. But the idea that the insertion of what he calls for, which is about 6,000 mercenaries, can change the chemistry and the tide of things, the situation in Afghanistan, that is bizarre. This is simply a call for more war profiteering. And I hope it is rejected. My fear is that Trump will see this as some way to outsource this, to contract it out, claim that they're saving money. And in the end, more Americans will die in the graveyard of empires. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast. It's available free every day, and it's on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.